Stress, anxiety, and depression are caused when you're living to please others. And that is the thought for today. Welcome to 7 Good Minutes. I'm Clyde Lee Dennis. Thanks for joining me for what I believe will be 7 of the most enriching minutes of your day. In today's audio, our friends from the School of Life provide some great information on overcoming depression. Enjoy.
Almost half of us will suffer from depression at some point in our lives, but the condition remains badly misunderstood and therefore often poorly treated. At the heart of our collective difficulty with depression is a confusion about what it actually is, and in particular, how it can be distinguished from a state that all of us know very well and with which it has a distracting number of similarities, namely sadness. It's because we unwittingly tend to apply to cases of depression a number of assumptions drawn from and better suited to an understanding of sadness that we end up suffering far more than we should. There are, on the surface, some notable similarities between those who are sad and those who are depressed. Both groups cry, both withdraw from the world, both complain of listlessness and a sense of alienation from their normal lives. But there is one categorical difference between depression and sadness. The sad person knows what they are sad about. The depressed person doesn't. Sad people can, without difficulty, tell us what is troubling them. I'm sad that my grandmother has died, or that I lost my job, or that my friends are being unkind to me. And, though it might sound strange, this is precisely what the depressed person is not capable of doing. They may be tearful and at a very low ebb, but they can't conclusively put a finger on what has drained life of meaning for them. They simply say it has no meaning per se. They aren't depressed about X or Y, as one might be sad about X or Y. They are, first and foremost, simply depressed. The inability of the depressed person to account concretely for their mood can lay them open to unwarranted charges of faking, malingering, or exaggerating. Friends who begin in a well-meaning search for a soluble problem can end up frustrated by the lack of progress. When pushed, the depressed person may latch on to rather odd or minor-sounding issues to account for their state. They might complain that there's no point going to work because the earth is due to be absorbed by the sun in 7.5 billion years. Or they might insist that life lacks all meaning because they've just dropped a glass on the floor and everything is now completely hopeless. At this stage, one can hear it said that if depression doesn't have any sensible psychological causes, the problem must be bound up with some kind of imbalance in brain chemistry, which it would be kinder and more effective to treat with pills. An idea of great appeal to the pharmaceutical industry first and foremost, but also to worried families and schools and employers who crave rapid and cost-effective solutions. But there is another approach to depression, which, though slower and more arduous, may be a great deal more effective in the long term. This stems from insights drawn from psychotherapy, the discipline that has, arguably, been able to understand depression better than any other. Depression is sadness that has forgotten its true causes. Forgotten because remembering may generate overwhelming, untenable feelings of pain and loss. In order to preserve a fragile peace of mind, one then chooses to be depressed rather than to have a realization. We pick unceasing numbness as protection against dreadful insight. To make things yet more difficult, the depressed person doesn't typically consciously feel that they are, in fact, lacking insight. They're not aware of a gap in their self-understanding. Furthermore, they are nowadays often taught to assume that they are just depressed, as one might be physically ill, a verdict that can be of appeal as much to the pharmaceutical industry as to certain people close to the patient with an interest in insights remaining buried. There's another key difference to note between sadness and depression. Sad people are grief-stricken about something out in the world, but they aren't necessarily sad about themselves. Their self-esteem is unaffected by their grief. whereas depressed people will characteristically feel wretched about themselves and be full of self-recrimination, guilt, shame, and self-loathing paranoia that may, at tragic extremes, culminate in suicidal thoughts. For psychotherapy, the origins of these violent moods of self-hatred lie in anger due for, but unable to be directed towards, someone else in the world that has then turned against the sufferer. Wrathful feelings that should have gone outwards towards a partner who's relentlessly defensive or denies one sex, or a parent who humiliated one in childhood. These feelings are instead driven back onto the sufferer and starts to attack them. The feeling, X has horribly let me down, turns into a very unpleasant but in some ways more bearable, I'm an unworthy and unbearable wretch. One becomes self-hating as a defense against the risks of hating someone else. Also worth noting in all this is that in many cases depression is associated with an apparently opposite mood, a kind of euphoric state termed mania, hence the term manic depressive. The mania in question looks from a distance a bit like happiness, just like depression can look like sadness. But in one area in particular, the relationship between mania and happiness is identical to that between depression and sadness. The common element is a disavowed self-knowledge. In mania, one is euphoric, but cannot go into one's own deep mind and discover its bitter truths, which explains one of the leading characteristics of manic people, the habit of being in flight from themselves, talking too much about nothing, over-exercising, drinking, working continuously, or spending too much, all as an escape from a submerged grief, rage, or loss. It is from this kind of diagnosis that a suggested cure emerges. What people in depression need above all is a chance to arrive at insight. For this, they will tend to need a hugely supportive and patient listener. They may also, used appropriately, benefit from temporary use of medication to lift their mood just enough so that they can endure a conversation.
Please keep in mind, this is about half of the entire presentation. If you're up for a treat, you should definitely listen to the whole thing. You can do so by clicking the link labeled View the Full Video on YouTube in the show notes. So that does it for this episode of 7 Good Minutes. Until next time, let's be civil to one another out there. Thanks for listening.